By the way, there are outlines at the front there. Be sure to grab you some. A couple of weeks ago, I was asked to teach this class and was given some leeway with curriculum. I was given some suggestions. But because of the short nature of the time to prepare, I thought I might present some things to you that I'm very familiar with, and certainly that subject would be evangelism. Let me tell you what my goal is going to be. I want to teach you how to teach others. I want to talk a lot of aspects about evangelism. You will never be in your life in a more greater time of opportunity to teach other people than you are right now. There are people that will be willing to listen to you, that will open their hearts to you. There will be occasions for you to help somebody know the Lord and not only change their life, but their eternity. And I realize, you know, as you come from the background that you have, there's a lot of things that you need to learn. You probably feel inadequate in many ways. But I want you to know that I'll never forget when I became a Christian back on campus. I was immediately, within days of my baptism, put into a class on evangelism. They happened to be having a class. And literally before that semester was over, I ended up teaching and baptizing a close friend from high school. It wasn't long after that my brother obeyed the gospel. And because of what I learned in how to teach others, it really propelled me into eventually becoming an evangelist. So many changes I made when I was in college. And I think a lot of it had to do with immediately upon my becoming a Christian, I was taught how to teach others. So I've been, by the way, for those who are coming a little later, the Brother Lanier was not able to make it tonight. He called me this afternoon, told me to have a college class, go into the adult classroom. I said, no, we won't do that. Let me just go ahead and jump in here and give you a preview of the next quarter. We're going to be talking about evangelism. Did everybody get an outline? Does anybody need outlines? Are they at the front door? We've got a few extra here. You can hand out. Raise your hand if you don't have one. But let's just talk about basic things. Teaching another person the gospel. A little bit frightening, isn't it? I want to show you how to do it. And I would hope as the time goes on this your school year, I will assist you in any way possible in this area. It is my passion. Like I say, when I became a Christian, I was taught how to do it. And it's one of the greatest works on earth. If you can play a part in helping another person become a Christian, there's a joy in that that is hard to describe. Let's first talk about evangelism. Why be evangelistic? I want to start off with the Great Commission. Mark 16:15-16, or Matthew 28:19-20. We'll look at Mark's account for a moment. Mark 16:15-16. And I love others to read as you have the Bible open. And Mark 16:15-16. Raise your hand if you're willing to read, and I'll just call on you here. Okay? Let's go for it.
And he said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned."
You can look at Matthew's account. "Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit." Now let's just stop just for a moment. Who's Jesus speaking to here in this passage? If you look at the passage, the context, the people physically there when Jesus is giving the Great Commission, who are they?
It says the 11 in verse 14. So
yes.
The apostles.
The 11 apostles. Now, the apostles, 11 men, they were really highly educated men, weren't they? They studied in the Jewish synagogues and moved. What were the apostles? Where were they from? Galilee. You know another name where that area would be they were hillbillies. They were uneducated men. Now, mind you, they loved the Lord. And they loved the Lord before they met the Lord, in the sense that they were disciples of John before they were disciples of Christ, and they were serious about their faith. But they did not have the advantages of wealth, of education. But one thing they did have was faith. But now imagine this. You're telling 11 men to go to all the nations. Now, they would get on their 747s and go, right, and they'd have radio and internet. Man, they'd have to go by mule and by foot. You would look at this on the surface and say, this is impossible. But, of course, we know that God was with them. If God's with you, you can do it. And we understand they had a kind of faith that as Jesus had prepared them, that they were able to just spread the gospel greatly. But let me say this. If it was just the 11 teaching, and that's all who did the teaching, it wouldn't have gotten done. It wouldn't have been accomplished. Look at Acts 5:42. As you begin to see the gospel spreading, you see that Christianity, one of the just the regular things of being a Christian, is talking about your faith. Now, you know, we live. I mean, what's the fervent subject right now in Alabama? What do people like to talk about? Starts with an F. Okay, that's right. Football. That's right. We talk about football and talk about a team and talk about various things, and I like that too. You know, I'm from Alabama, and so we can talk football all day long. But you see, Christians won't talk about Christ. Acts 5:42. Who's got that would like to read with me that? Acts 5:42. Okay?
And every day in the temple and from house to house, they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ.
Now, it's interesting. Here it's in Jerusalem. I know it's an exciting time. People becoming Christians, you see. I think the activity of the apostles in this case. But I want you to notice what happened. By the way, before we go any further, let me ask you this question. These people, when they were teaching in the temple, right? And that's it, just in the temple. Where else are they teaching? Acts 5:42, we just read the verse. Where else are they teaching?
Houses.
Can I ask a question? And I'd like to see a show of hands on this one. How many of you have ever been in a Bible study with a non-Christian in your home? Okay? One of the interesting things I've found over the years is that many Christians have never even seen evangelism done. And therefore, how do I do evangelism if I don't see it done? And that's one of the things that I'm hoping to work on in the course of this study. We'll have some labs, you know. There'll be voluntary labs, okay? But I'm hoping we might could get some study groups together and actually have some people in there, let you see how that's done. We might start out just amongst ourselves. But one of the things I realize, if we're going to try to do this work of teaching others, I don't know about you, but I can remember when I was a Baptist. When I first became part of the Baptist church and they wanted me to be part of evangelism, one of the first things I did was just to go along, which they did door knocking. I don't know, have you ever done door knocking? Knocking on doors of people you never met, talk to. I can remember, in this case, they had some visitors' cards and they were just going out, going to make calls. I remember just my knees knocking. And I was there with them, and I wasn't expected to say anything. I went along and saw how it was done. I couldn't believe, they're knocking on a door somebody they don't know. How can you do that? I remember being so afraid, but I saw it done. And that's one of the things that I want us to learn, to see evangelism done, to see how it's done. When you see it done, and you see how it can be accomplished, it's not that difficult to do. It really isn't. But sometimes I think we need that example. But now, Acts 8. Let's go further now in how the gospel spread in the first century. Acts chapter 8. We've been talking about the apostles and the faith of the apostles. Somebody gets Acts 8, 3 and 4, raise your hand and I'll have call on you. Acts 8, 3 and 4. Eventually I'm going to learn everybody's name and I'll just jump on you and make you, you know, cut, read it, and then you'll volunteer more quickly. Okay, how about that?
3 and 4.
Uh-huh. Now, the church is being persecuted. People were being dragged off to prison, and people had to leave town. Now, just imagine this. You had to leave town today. You had to go to another town you didn't leave. Now, you're going to have to do everything you can to be able to have food and clothing and start over. Now, you would just barely have enough time to attend church, right? You wouldn't have any time to do anything else. But notice what happened to these early Christians. When they were scattered, what did they do?
They taught this, they traveled.
They started teaching people. You know, I don't know about, but you know, you look at their faith. teaching people is what they did. They understood that. This is part of Christianity. This is what I do. It's like, you know, could I say talk about football and somebody in this state and go, well, what's your favorite team? Who do you pull for? And you just get to talking about it. It became natural. And therefore, people became Christians. I've got a simple, simple point to make tonight. And that's the only point I want to make. There is one thing alone you need if you're going to teach other people. And that is a real faith. It's not how much knowledge, even though we're going to talk about experience. But really, I'm going to give you an example that to me is stunning. Turn to Mark chapter 5, 17 through 20. This will be our focal point tonight. What does it take to teach somebody? What do I need to know? Now, understand, knowledge is great and the amount of knowledge you have is great. Learning the how-tos, avoiding the problems. But I want to give you the essence of evangelism. Mark 5, 17 through 20. Nathan Smith, I'm going to let you read that if you would. Mark 5, 17 through 20. Imagine this, you witnessing this situation.
And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with them.
Okay, now stop for a moment. Okay, let's just stop and get the context. And I'll let you pick it up in a moment. We look at verse 17 and 18. Do you know anything about this demon-possessed man? Do you know what the name of the demons were that were in him? Remember the name? Legion. You know where he lived? What's that? He lived in the tombs with dead people. A few times they caught him, they chained him, he broke the chain. Now, this guy would be a great reputation. He's the kind of guy you'd want over here for a meal, wouldn't it? He'd be the kind of guy that you'd probably invite into your life and let him tell you the wisdom of how to live, and you would trust what he told you so you could really live, right? No, man, you wouldn't have anything to do with him. He's crazy. He's living with he's got demons in him. He's living out here, you know, in the graveyard. Jesus came and cast out the demons. Remember, the demons went into the swine and the swine went down into the water and drowned. And now, Jesus had come across the sea to this place. They really didn't know Jesus and they're scared. They scared dead Jesus. Please leave. I don't know who you are. Please leave. And so this man, he's now in his right mind and he says, let me go with you. Now, I don't know about you, but if you're thinking about this, you'd say, of course you got to go with me. Man, your reputation is shot here. Come on with me. That's not what Jesus did. Look what he did. If you keep reading in Mark 15, look at, let's go ahead and start with 18 again and go 18 to 20.
As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with them. And he did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how much mercy and how he has had mercy on you. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis, how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone marveled.
What? Jesus, you're leaving him here to teach. He's going to be a flop. Nobody's going to talk to him. But you know, the Lord knew what he was doing. Needless to say, I'm the one that doesn't know what I'm doing. Lord knows what he's doing. Now, what was the subject of this man's message? Look at it carefully. This has got to be your message too. What's the subject? What did he tell people?
The Lord's done for you.
Yeah. What the Lord's done for you, his mercy. Do we have that message? Number one, the grace of God, the mercy of God, how God has been good to us, has got to well up within us. And if you have that, you've got a message to share. Now, how much knowledge did this man have? I don't think he had a lot of knowledge, okay? He could say that much. Every one of us could say that much. Now, I'm saying now what you find here is that he talked about what the Lord did for him. And you go later and look at the Luke's account when Jesus returned. You know, remember when Jesus came this time, they said, get out of here. Leave. We don't want to hear you. Jesus leaves. Guess what happens when he comes back later? Luke 8 and verse 40. It says, and so when it was, Jesus returned, that the multitude welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. And what this man did, listen to me carefully, he knew Jesus had been merciful to him. He talked with others about what Jesus did, and it set the way for Jesus to come and then teach. There's various levels of evangelism when we talk about evangelism. I'm hoping to equip you not only to have the joy in the Lord to talk with people about that, but what you teach them when they talk to you. Now, you may not be at that level where you can really necessarily help a person where they're at to what they need to know. But you know, you can take them to somebody else who can, can't you? And so one of the things, when we talk about evangelism, I'm not trying to say you've got to do it all. You eventually may get to that point. But I've learned in evangelism that it's a matter of relationships. Us believing in the Lord and setting the example and people seeing that. And we may teach them or we may take them to somebody who can teach them. Think in that way. I will never have too much time. Or not enough time, let me put it that way, not to take some time to help somebody know the Lord. Now, I realize my schedule may grab me, but I've always wanted to take time to talk with others about serving Him. Now, okay, any comments so far? Talking about evangelism. I'll say this again. You've got to have a passion and a love for the Lord. If you don't have that, I don't want to be mistaken. I don't want this to come out wrong, but don't try to get involved in evangelism. I want you to be involved in evangelism only if the Lord, you love them. I've seen some people involved in evangelism and they look like they've been weaned on a pickle. You know, they're angry and they're bitter and they're unhappy and I want you to follow the Lord just like me. And the person goes, I don't know. You know, it's like somebody with leprosy. Here, come on, you could have some of this too. You know, that's not what we should be in evangelism. We may need to first, before we talk about evangelism, get our own soul right, get our own heart right. But now let's go to the book of Acts. Again, let me tell you, by the way, let me just stop for a moment and tell you a little bit about the goal in the next quarter. I'm going to be teaching you a series of lessons that I use in home studies. It's called Studies in the Cross of Christ. I don't know how many of you were here the night I presented the lesson on instrumental music and the cross of Christ. The second half of that lesson was basically part of my home study on Studies in the Cross of Christ. So one of the things I want to do is to show you my standard lesson that I use with others. Now let me say this, depending on the person, you may have to start at another place. I just want to give you an idea of the process of teaching, some of the challenges of teaching, how you think as a teacher, and trying to bring a person from where they're at to where they need to be. And so, even if you're at a very basic level, and you don't have a lot of background, these studies in the cross of Christ will be good for you. I'm thrilled to share this with Christians because these are just fundamental things that if nothing else, I hope you get that out of our study. But in addition to presenting that study, I'm going to be talking to you about strategies as a teacher. What you're trying to do as you teach. And I can show you, we didn't take time to look at the woman at the well, but if you analyze the teachings of Jesus, you oftentimes will see Jesus looking at a person where they're at and showing and going through a series of steps to get them where they need to be. Now, with that being said, the book of Acts. Y'all studying the book of Acts right now with Brad, aren't you? On Sunday morning, is that right? Okay, good. I can ask this question. I know you all give me a good answer on this. What is the purpose of the book of Acts? One at a time. Okay. What's the purpose of the book of Acts?
Show how the church started.
Okay, how the church started and what else? Isn't it a history of the spread of the gospel in essence? You know, the theme of the book of Acts 1:8, where you shall be witnesses unto me in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the uttermost parts of the earth. And you kind of see a little circle here, and it goes bigger, 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 bigger in here. You know, it's going everywhere. It's like the fulfillment of the Great Commission. But notice in Acts 1:8, it says, you shall be, what word did I just use? You shall be
Witnesses.
Now, what I want you to see is the very core of the fulfillment of the Great Commission. I don't know if many of you, I know we had a lot of people, like 50 tonight, when I did the material on how to teach somebody that does not believe in the Bible. You remember that series at our house on Sunday night? I can give you outlines of this if you'd like. Eventually, I'm going to preach it soon on Sunday morning. But the first thing that you need to understand is the spread of the gospel is going to be spread to people who didn't even know the one true God. And so to the Jews they did, but to the Gentiles they didn't, and it spread to Jews and Gentiles. If you want to look at the first thing that the apostles would teach people, it related to the idea of them being witnesses of the resurrection of Christ. Let's look at a few verses in the book of Acts. Acts 2:32. Here, Peter, in the middle of his sermon, says, "This Jesus has God raised up, of which we are all witnesses." In the New Testament, particularly in the book of Acts, when you read the word witness, tell me what it means. What do you mean you're a witness? What does it mean?
You've seen it happen.
What did they see happen?
Jesus' teachings and miracles.
Say that again?
Jesus' teachings and miracles.
Well, that's true, but that's not exactly the idea of witness here. It's close. It's real close. Let's look at this. Let's see if I can... I don't have that in the outline. It says, "This Jesus God has raised up," this verse we just read, "of which we are all witnesses." They are witnesses of Jesus after He was resurrected. The resurrection. One of the things, by the way, I'm not necessarily teaching this semester on evangelism. Maybe we can do another study sometime on evidences. But we need to be able to establish that Jesus was raised from the dead. Acts 3:14-15. Excuse me. Acts 3:14-15. The heart of every sermon in the book of Acts was this. Basically what Peter says here. He says, "But you deny the Holy One and just, and asked for a murderer to be granted to you, and killed the Prince of Life, whom God raised from the dead, of which we are witnesses." So the thrust of the book of Acts is to establish that Jesus was raised from the dead. Now, can you tell me, how does proving Jesus was raised from the dead have anything to do with the preaching of the gospel? Connect the resurrection to the rest. If Jesus was raised from the dead, what does that mean?
Fulfillment of all Jewish prophecies.
He fulfilled the prophecies of Him? Is that right? Okay. What else? That would make the Bible true, wouldn't it? Make the Bible true. What else?
It means He was who He said He was.
And who did He say He was? Look at Romans 1:3-4. And I may be wandering from my outline here, and that's okay. I'll do that a lot. Look at Romans 1:3-4, because it's really critical that we understand the resurrection and its significance. Romans 1:3-4. And I'm talking about today, if you're talking to somebody on campus as an atheist, agnostic, a Muslim, a Hindu, this is the approach you would take with them. And I try to show historical evidence, whether it be fulfilled prophecy, eyewitness testimony, looking at the character of the witnesses. If I conclude that Jesus Christ is raised from the dead, now notice what follows. Romans 1:3-4.
"Concerning His Son Jesus Christ, our Lord, who was born of the seed of David according to the flesh, and declared to be the Son of God with power according to the Spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead."
Notice, He's declared to be the Son of God by the Spirit of holiness and the resurrection of the dead. Now, does everybody understand that? If Jesus is raised from the dead, that proves He's the Son of God. That's what this verse is saying. Right? Everybody agree with it? Does anybody disagree with it? Now, question. Was Lazarus raised from the dead? Did Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead? Why is it Lazarus the Son of God? Why does Jesus' resurrection from the dead make him the Son of God? Lazarus' resurrection from the dead just makes him fail and raised from the dead. Why does Jesus' resurrection mean that?
Because Lazarus was raised by God.
Uh-huh.
Jesus raised himself.
Well, really, you could say he was raised by God, the power of God. You could really use the same language.
But he is God.
Lazarus. He is, but how does it prove? I'm trying to get at something here. Did you get it?
Lazarus died
again. Okay.
Jesus was but, raised to die no more.
Wait, I can't hear you.
Jesus, he was raised and he did die again. He ascended to heaven.
Okay, that's true. But does that make it? Is that what makes him Son of God? Okay, go ahead.
Jesus claimed to be the Son of God.
There. Okay, here we go. This is it. Jesus claimed to be the Son of God. Matter of fact, remember times the Jews kind of didn't like some of the things he did? Remember where he cleansed the temple? Now, show us a sign. What authority do you do this? Show us a sign. And what did Jesus say? You want a sign? Destroy this temple and what? And he'll raise it in 3 days. And you know, even his enemies understood, he predicted his resurrection. There's another occasion he said, I'll show you a sign, I'll show you the sign of the Son of Jonah. And Jonah was 3 days what? Belly of the fish. Even his enemies understood that he predicted that he would die and that he would be raised on the 3rd day. And that's why they put all the guards there and they sealed the stone and they put the boulder on the tomb. So, Jesus claimed the sign of signs would be that he would be raised from the dead. He claimed to be the Son of God. Did God raise an imposter? No. And so that's why the resurrection is great proof. And really, if you want a separate study, we could talk about this. It's a wonderful study. By the way, when I was in college, after I learned how to do evangelism, we studied evidences right along these lines of how you establish the resurrection, how you can prove it in a way to an open-minded person. And it's a great study. Now, if you prove the resurrection, we prove that Jesus is the Son of God. Let me show you what else you prove. Look at Acts 17, 30 and 31. Acts 17, 30 and 31. Here, Paul is on Mars Hill speaking to pagans, idolaters. He tries to tell them about the resurrection of Christ. And notice some of the conclusion he draws from that. Acts 17, 30, 31.
Truly these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent. Because he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead.
Now notice here he's talking about judgment day. You got to repent. You got to change your life. And can imagine the pagans going, you know, they lived for the flesh. Why do I need to change my life? Well, there's a judgment day. Oh, really? A judgment day? Really? Yeah, how do I know that's going to happen? What if I die before that happens? Well, he's given assurance in that he raised Jesus from the dead. If Jesus was raised from the dead, you're going to be raised from the dead. Believer or unbeliever. The judgment day is a reality. Life after this life is a reality. Look to the Christian. One of my favorite verses here. 2 Corinthians 4, 13 and 14. And it gets back to evangelism, by the way. You kind of go in a circular way back to evangelism. Why do I teach others? Why would I give up things for this life for Christ? Why do I do that? If I believe Jesus is raised from the dead, it changes everything. Who would like to read 2 Corinthians 4, 13 and 14? Guys, go ahead, Mark.
It is written, I believe, therefore I have spoken. With that same spirit of faith, we also believe and therefore speak. Because we know that the one who raised the Lord Jesus from the dead will also raise us with Jesus and present us with you in his presence.
Now notice this verse. We believed, therefore what? We speak. Knowing that Jesus was raised, notice in verse 14, if Jesus is raised from the dead and I'm a Christian, what else is going to happen concerning me? Jesus was raised, I'm going to be raised. I had an opportunity this last week to participate in the burial of Yvette's mother. Actually was able to go down to the hospital just shortly after she died. And to be there in that occasion. It's a wonderful thing to be able to look death in the face and understand what it is. And the reason why I know there's life after death is because I know Jesus was raised from the dead. If Jesus was raised, I will be raised. If I'm a Christian, I'm raised to eternal life. If I'm a non-Christian, I'm going to be raised to judgment. You go through the book of Acts, the resurrection is central. It's central for us to see the eternal nature of things. It's essential for us to see the seriousness of our sin, of Jesus' death, which was a sacrifice, His resurrection, give us assurance of the power of God. You know, we talk about baptism. Look at Colossians 2:12-13. We know, go back to the Great Commission. You know, we have the idea of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. We talk about he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. We read about making disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Notice here, baptism, resurrection, conversion, how it's all tied together. Colossians 2:12-13. I'll read this one. It says, "Buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith in the working of God, who raised him from the dead. And you being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he has made alive together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses." Notice how it is our faith in the raised Lord that moves us to be baptized into Christ. As I'm buried in baptism into Christ, I'm calling on God to perform a work. What do I want God to do when I'm buried with Him in baptism? What am I trusting Him to do? What is the faith in the working of God? Why were you baptized? Hot day, you want to be cool? You know? I wanted to get initiation into some denominational body. Why were you baptized? You are appealing to God for what? For forgiveness. For good conscience. And you see, I'm trusting that God will remove my sins just like He raised Jesus from the dead. He is going to have the power to forgive me. And as I'm raised from the dead, I've got a new life. Romans 6, we talk about that. But Colossians 2, very similar here. It says, you're alive together with Him. So, as we talk about evangelism, faith. Now, what do you do if someone claims not to believe in God? And they're willing to talk to you. This is somewhat a review here. But what do you do? What do you try to present to them?
Evidence.
What kind of evidence from the book of Acts have we learned that would be a great thing to present? The resurrection of Christ. I like to present it this way. Who was Jesus? Who's the historical Jesus? Could we at least consider the evidence claimed? Let's look at the facts. Let's try to understand His claims and how we would go about to try to prove or disprove those claims. And again, I'm not going to present this to you this particular quarter, but we could go there. We can have some special studies on that if we need to. Okay, let's do a little discussion. I know I've been kind of lecturing to you a little bit. What have been some hindrances that you have had in talking with others about the Lord? What are some things that may either be your fears or things you would like to learn, or things that may have made it difficult for you? What are some areas that you find that you might struggle with? Some things we might talk about actually this quarter. Are you finding people willing to talk about religion a lot? Y'all have any problems there?
It's usually a pretty awkward thing to talk about at times.
It can be awkward, yeah. It can.
It can be emotional too. Like, people will get all upset, and then I'm at least tempted to get all upset. I'm like, it's so obvious. Just read it, you know. And it's just,
yes.
So it can be a very emotional thing sometimes, I think.
Yes.
Being caught off guard.
Say that again.
Caught off guard.
Caught off guard. Yes. If people start talking to you, do you have any problems there? Do you know what to say? Yeah.
I guess what I'm finding out is that I feel pretty secure in my faith until someone challenges it, and until I feel that someone's talking to me who knows more about the scriptures than I do, and then it makes me question what I believe, and then I have to back out of the whole study because I start questioning everything, and I can't, you know, even though when I go back and I calm down and I go back over everything, I know that what I believe, I still believe. Mm-hmm. But when I get into a situation with someone, I get flustered, and you know, they start quoting verses that I'm not sure how they're misusing them, and I don't know how to answer all their questions, and then I get really flustered.
I want to ask in the future, at least if we have time and I'm around, talk to me. It's a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity when you think people know a lot more than you do. I talked with people that were PhDs in college, and I was a student. And they quoted a lot of things, but by their doubt sometimes is a great opportunity to learn more. And so the thing is, you know, you don't have to get done like a salesman in an hour period. And that's what sometimes, you know, people try to almost like selling a car. You know, you got to do it right now. You got to. And there's a lot of things people thought may have never heard before. And you know what I do? I say, let me study it. And so. I've been intimidated before. I've been intimidated by people. And, but, you know, I've always tried to go back and reload and figure out where they're coming from, try to understand it. Because there's possibility. Let me say this. Our goal is truth. We might be wrong with something. You know, I'm not going to hold on to something just because I've been taught it. I want to hold on to something because it's true. And eventually I need to develop the ability, as 1 Peter 3:15 says, to give a reason for the answer of the hope that's in me. So again, you know, I wanted us to feel more comfortable about how to talk with others and how to discuss changes. Okay, that's first fail or second? Do we get two? Okay. Typically, I'm deaf and don't hear them. I'm glad I heard that. Have we got five more minutes? Okay. Any other issues about evangelism that you... Worrying about what? Yeah, worrying about offending. One of the things that I'll show you the approach that I take. I have tried in my studies, and this is critical. In anything I teach in the whole court, this is the gem that took me a few years to learn. Try to find out where the person is at. Understand how to get where you want to go and start with common ground. You know what I used to do? I want to argue with you. Let's find a point of difference and let's jump in, buddy, and I can out-argue you. And you know, if somebody does, let's say somebody doesn't know a lot, and I know more than you do. I've got more weapons than you do. I've got more missiles. I've got more bullets, you know. I'm going to win. And the person withdraws. Okay, I'm outgunned. What I try to do is to start off with what we agree on. And then in a logical process, work to the point of disagreement. Do you know that I found when you take that approach, by the time you get to the point of disagreement, there's almost no struggle at all? If you remember the study that I did on instrumental music, it's just a microcosm of the approach I take. If you analyze that lesson, I try to start from the inspiration of the scriptures and work up to a point of disagreement. And if people agree with you on each point, by the time you get to the point of disagreement, they don't have an argument. They don't know they don't have an argument, but by the time you get there, everything's been diffused. And I rarely have a problem when I'm given time as a teacher to teach in that way. I think that's what Jesus did commonly. Commonly, he would take a person, they would start with some common point, he would go from there and lead them to see themselves. So that's going to be one of the goals we will have in these studies. Sometimes when you do it that way, people won't be as offended. Because I'm going to tell you something. If you're talking with somebody that knows more than you do, and you know they know more than you do, and they're coming at you, you know, you do want to withdraw. I'm hoping I can show you how to help in that situation. Okay, I'm going to have material that I'll hand out to you next Wednesday. This is going to be a really simple study in some ways. We'll teach it at a couple different levels. I'll eventually have material on websites. By the way, I'd like next time, I eventually want to get everybody's email address, phone number. I'd like to have a contact list for the class in case I wanted to email some stuff to you. And I will be putting this on the web, and so you also can listen to previous classes if you miss it. Appreciate your participation. Thank you.